Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, podcast listeners, and welcome to Season 6 of Going There with Dr. Mike. I'm Dr. Mike Friedman, and I'm bringing you a whole new batch of powerful, perspective-shifting conversations with your favorite artists, like The Head and the Heart, Bishop Briggs, The Beaches, and more. We have some exciting guests coming up, including our first ever live episode with Brooklyn's own Rosie. That's right, we're recording Going There live at the 2025 Sound My Music Festival for Mental Health, taking place May 18th at the Brooklyn Paramount, with performances by Borns, American Authors, and Milk. Get tickets at universe.com/soundmindfest and use code SOUNDMINDFRIENDS for $10 off. That's universe.com/soundmindfest and code SOUNDMINDFRIENDS. Now, to kick off Season 6, we're going to revisit one of our favorite episodes from last season, as I was joined by British musician Youngblood to talk about the personal strategies he uses to keep himself headed in the right mental health direction. Recorded right before the release of his vulnerable single Breakdown, our insightful discussion covered depression, anxiety, and insomnia, and perhaps most importantly, how to push back against the misconception that one might lose their true self in the process of healing or medicating. Enjoy and learn from the episode, and then be sure to come check us out in Brooklyn on May 18th, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to catch the brand new season of Going There with Dr. Mike. Brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com.
Now on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one of the most difficult issues that many of us face on our mental health journey is how we understand our emotional experience in terms of our greater sense of identity and self-concept. In many ways, we see our experience of intense and painful emotions, such as depression and anxiety, as something that very much interferes with connecting with ourselves and others. Perhaps we don't have the energy or concentration to work, make social plans, or engage in hobbies. And even if we can find our way to do the things that are important to us, that make us who we are, we don't feel the same sense of enjoyment or fulfillment that we might when we're not as depressed or anxious. And so in this way, We see these painful feelings as not us, but rather something we want to reduce in order to feel like ourselves. And yet, if we've experienced feelings such as depression and anxiety throughout our lives, those feelings actually become very familiar to us. They can often feel like a part of us, a companion that we've had forever. And as painful as these feelings may be, in many cases, our anxiety and depression may feel very valuable to us. Our feelings tell us that something was wrong in our lives that we needed to address. They motivate our creativity. They help us develop a sense of empathy with others. And so in these ways, our intense negative feelings may actually be very crucial to our sense of who we are and how we think about the world. And so when we begin to contemplate mental health treatment, we obviously very much want to resolve our pain and suffering. But we may be concerned that even though we will feel better, we may lose ourselves in the process. We then fear we will become someone different with a more narrow range of feelings. And so we may be hesitant to engage in certain forms of treatment, such as taking medication that may make us feel better, but may blunt our emotions or make us feel numb. Youngblood talks about this issue in a discussion of his song, God Save Me, But Don't Drown Me Out. He and I talk about how he approaches his struggle with depression, anxiety, and insomnia in a way that allows him to feel better, but still feel like himself. This includes strategies such as being creative, exercise, engaging in focused breathing, and trying to reach out to others as coping strategies. And we talk about how this balance of trying to make ourselves feel better, but not lose the essence of who we are, is an ongoing and crucial part of our mental health journey. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Youngblood has to say. Hey, Dom, welcome to Going There.
Hello, mate. Thank you for having me, man. Honestly, appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you, and thank you for taking the time. So let's start with a song of yours that best represents your mental health journey.
Wow. Mental health has been such a massive topic of mine, kind of since the... It's what I really wrote songs about, you know what I mean, since the start of my journey as an artist. So I think there's a lot to choose from. But I think kind of the most... one of the most emotional points was writing a song at breaking point, and kind of the only thing I could do was get in front of a mic and having almost like a breakdown in front of the people in the studio. And there's a song called God Save Me But Don't Drown Me Out. I remember having like, it was kind of, I was in America, and Youngblood was like successful in inverted commas, whatever that means. I felt like I'd kind of scratched the surface of what I meant, because my whole first album was about growing up in the north of England, feeling like an outsider or feeling like misjudged or not quite perfect. But I think I'd only scratched the surface of what I meant emotionally, like kind of I hid behind this superhero, because I really was an insecure person a lot of my life, and I built Youngblood to be kind of a superhero that I could turn to, and hopefully, even though it happened, like I dreamt that like I would find a community of people that could turn to this one idea that would be like able to like help us get through. And I remember God Save Me But Don't Drown Me Out was probably a song for me that I was like, wow, like I really spoke with my soul then, not just my wit or my words. You know what I mean? I think music can sometimes be mathematical and fun, but I think I really pulled back a curtain and kind of really pulled back a layer within myself when I was writing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that concept, save me, but don't drown me out. That to me is a very powerful concept. I think a lot of people worry about that with mental health care in general, particularly medication.
Yeah.
People get very worried that they're going to take something and it'll help whatever symptom they're trying to address, but it'll somehow change the personality. But even outside of medication, I think as a metaphor, a lot of people are worried that if they take in some kind of care, somehow they're gonna wash away.
100%.
Was that the concept of the song?
100%. I feel like in my life, especially up to a lot, like probably just recently, really, I just felt like pain is all I have ever known. I wake up every day with a knot in my stomach, and I don't know why. So I've learned how to live with that. So is it gonna be more scary if my life changes and I have to learn how to live with something else, even if it's less pain, it's foreign to me. It's different. I don't understand it. Or is it better to just stay here? Now I've learned to cope with it and it might progressively get worse, but at least I know what I'm dealing with. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like when I wrote that this, like the lyric goes, calm me down before I sleep, because I don't know where I've just been. And the morning seems so far away and the drugs just hit. So I'm wide awake. I'm not going to waste my life because I've been fucked up, because it doesn't matter. So waste my time and God save all of us. And I won't let my insecurities define who I am. And I basically just was like letting my fucking soul speak for me. Kind of, that's why it's so schizophrenic. It's like, I want to be seen and I want to be heard and I won't let my insecurities define who I am. But I'm also terrified at the same time of admitting that there's something wrong with me.
Yeah, I think that what you're speaking to is something I feel like so many people find, because on the one hand, feeling good feels good, whatever that is, but also feeling like you understand yourself or you're familiar with yourself feels good in a kind of grounding way.
100%.
And if what's familiar to you is not good, feeling good then can be a very complicated venture, because you often don't feel like yourself when you're feeling good. And it's sort of like, okay, where are you taking me here? You know, it's sort of like the devil you know.
You just get frightened to death. I feel like when I grew up in the north of England, where talking about your head, you just don't do it. You know what I'm saying? I think you kind of just like, it's literally, there's one thing being British, stiff upper lip, son. And there's one thing being from the north of England, which is kind of like three times that. And I feel like I've always just been a really anxious person, and I've spent a lot of time in my imagination, because if you meet me, I'm like, hello, what's happening? What? And I kind of do that to combat the kind of the darkness a lot. I really feel like music was an outlet for me to do that, but that was really hard too, because I started writing songs in a time where like everything on the radio was all about love, and people were like, why are you singing about your head? Why are you singing about politics? Why are you singing about like that? People on the radio don't want to hear about that. And I think it was kind of crazy because all my friends were talking about it. It was like the dawn of a new time where young people were like, yo, I ain't all right. Or yo, I want to change my gender. Or yo, I'm tired of hiding my sexuality. Or I'm tired of hiding what is going on inside my head because you don't want to talk about it. And then social media became a thing where people could speak so openly and everyone had a platform. And I could feel that, even though like, it's so funny, everyone is always one step behind in art. You know what I mean? There's like a movement happening and everyone's like, nah, that's not going to happen. Then comes out of nowhere, even though it's been bubbling for literally years. And I feel like at the start, all I wanted to do was be like, yo, I don't like myself. I second guess everything I say. I wake up every morning like there's a knot in my stomach. I feel completely depressed. I don't want to get out of bed. What the fuck can I do about it? And I literally like, I had 8,000 followers on Instagram. You know what I mean? It was mostly my mates or whatever. And I just started saying this into a phone because I was like, this is helping me. It was more for me than anyone else. You know what I mean? Because I was like, I just wanted to connect to someone. I was told to not fucking taught to not express myself like that. And all of a sudden I had this thing, which was a phone that I could look down at camera and it wouldn't talk back. And I could almost like video log it, and I started posting it. And we were on our first tour across Europe, and no one really knew who we were because it was just like, no one gave a fuck. You know what I mean? But I remember I started to do that, and I remember being like freaking out. It's like, oh my God, 200 people saw my story. What the fuck? Whoa. You know what I mean? I was like, that's crazy. When you kind of disconnect and go and kind of go like, oh, like you're a person there, I'm a person. This screen thing feels like we're so kind of like not real or a computer game, but it's like, no, we have heartbeats, we sweat, we fucking piss, we shit, we eat. You know what I mean? It's like, I was like, wow, 200 heartbeats have just seen that. So I kept doing more and I kept doing more and I kept going deeper. And then I started like talking to young people in the line about issues they felt in politics and issues they felt in their head. And I remember it going from 200 to 1,000 to 10,000 to 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 to nearly about 500,000 a day now on our stories. That I was just like, it all you got to do is tell the truth. And I think the only reason, the biggest reason why I built Youngblood, because there was nowhere for me to go. And there was nowhere for me to go to find friends to go like, oh, I feel like this. I feel like scared. And I always would look into my phone. And if anyone's watching this now, I'll be like, find this community of Youngblood. Because Youngblood isn't me. I'm just like, hello. I'm the person on the fucking CD cover. But like, it's more than music. It's like music is like kind of 30% of it. 70% of Youngblood is a movement and a mindset being like, I don't want to face this alone. And it's a hub for you to come to be like, I'm going through this. And then chances are someone in the comment section will be like, yo, I feel that too. I felt like I was alone like that. And it just became this massive ecosystem of that, more so than the music, I think. You know what I mean?
You know, one of the things that you said there that I feel like really resonates is you're talking about the idea of hating yourself. And I think most people feel that when you hate yourself, it's the content. So you think negative things about yourself, which is true for many people. But it also is what you're talking about, is that when you hate yourself, every single part of your experience is something that, like you said, gets second guessed, because you don't just accept it as, excuse me, this is good as it is. You know, so you second guess it, you hide it, you suppress it, you avoid it. And at some point you stop even thinking about, well, I'm going to share what's real, because there's so many places along the way where what you really feel is just not going to get expressed, that sometimes people even numb themselves out to begin with. And I feel like you're really talking about just how insidious self-hate can be in that process way.
100%. And the thing about it is like, it's not your fault. You know what I mean? It's such a crazy thing. There's nothing more frightening than your own head. You know what I'm saying? I think like that's just the way it is. And I think I always say to a lot of people, it's like, it's not your fault. You are not weird. You are not strange. You are not, do not have a malfunction. You do not have something wrong with you. It's a completely natural thing that if it is suppressed and if it's taught to be suppressed, that's when it becomes like dark and dangerous. It's like at the end of the day, like all of us feel sadness. All of us feel pain. All of us feel thing. It means you're working. That's what I say. It means your body's working. You're feeling something. And some of us feel like we feel nothing. But I believe if you really reach deep down inside yourself, if you feel like that, I always ground myself. You know what I mean? I literally just like go touch a fucking table, or like go get a coffee and smell it, or go put my feet in some fucking grass. I know I sound like a hippie, but I'm like, just, I'm telling you, like, if you're future tripping, or you feel disconnected, or you feel depressed, or you feel crazy, it's like a lot of us can feel like we're watching ourselves from like a video game perspective instead of feeling in the center of our head. And I would literally just be like, it's fine. Just go rub your hands on your fabric. Go like, I don't know, stick your head in the fridge for 10 minutes or some shit. You know what I mean? Like feel the cold, or like, I've been trying to do that a lot recently, because it makes me feel like this is real life. And it's like, what a fucking treat, like to actually breathe in. Like if you take a breath in, it feels amazing. Like we're so lucky to be able to fucking do that, or like drink some water, or, you know what I mean? Smell a candle, or fucking, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like little things like that really like, really sort my head out. If you can kind of just be like, what do I literally need to survive? I think that's kind of, it makes you feel like you don't, it makes you feel just like inside your head, and that fucking helps me a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it starts with that thing that you said, which I think is so important, because the only unique and original thing we have to offer the world is us. And the more we're in touch with all of our nooks and crannies, all of our, you know, places that are uncomfortable and dark and confused, the more that we have the potential to connect with other people. Because listen, it's not that if somebody never feels anything badly, I feel like that's great for them. But for me, that's not really as helpful, quite frankly. Like I kind of need people who understand what it is to be in the darkness. And so I think what you're talking about to some degree is that when you feel like all these things that you're feeling is the thing that's going to disconnect you from people, that pivot to say, listen, yeah, you always have to, I guess, think about, all right, who do I share what with? Maybe, you know, you have to, I guess, tactical about it. But that fundamental first pivot, that's the good stuff. That's the stuff that makes you unique. That's the stuff that's actually going to help you connect to yourself and others. 100%. That's a whole different world now.
100%. That each and every single one of us is unique and completely individual. But if you shut off a side of yourself that might not necessarily be attractive by society's means, then you're shutting off a part of yourself. You're shutting off a part of yourself that is completely unique, that or could be completely unique. Like your trajectory might help someone else in the same regard that someone else's trajectory might help you. It's like if you shut it off and you're looking down, you're gonna miss something. Like someone could walk past you, is exactly the same as you. I don't know, going through loss, going through pain, going through insomnia, going through anxiety, going through whatever you're going through, if you don't look up, you're not going to see them. And that person could have changed the whole trajectory of your whole life, even if they would have just looked at you in the eye and said, what's up, on the street. Or that's why, like, for me, I try and just, like, again, like, your life is as light as you want to make it. Like, you got to make a conscious effort to fucking try. That's the thing. It's like, I'm in pain all the time. I'm depressed. But every time I go into a coffee shop, I make sure I look a person in the eye and connect with them on a human level. And just, like, just do that. I'm not saying, like, go get a fucking ring of daisies and be like, yo, man, what's happening? You know what I mean? It's none of that. Nothing like that. But I'm just saying, like, I try and get 3 things out of a day that, like, make me fucking human. You know what I mean?
Now, for different people, the pain, you mentioned a few things. You mentioned depression, you mentioned pain, you mentioned insomnia. Those things all can manifest differently for different people. Do you feel comfortable talking about how those manifest for you so that we have a sense of kind of like what that internal experience is?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like as soon as I open my eyes for the first minute of my day, it's just horrible. I don't know why. I literally just don't know why. It's like I can go to bed like I've had the best day ever. But like I wake up and for the first 40 minutes of my day, it's like it's a choice. It's like I wake up at a crossroad every morning. I'm like, ow, fuck this. This is crazy. And this is just how I feel. But what I do is I combat it. I can't sit there. If I feel it, I've got to get up and I've got to face it. And I've got to be like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go? Usually there's a hill across from my house. I live in an area in London called Primrose Hill. It's like a real big, it's a very famous hill in London. And what I do is every morning at the minute, I'm sprinting up it as hard as I can, because even though that makes me feel like fucking hell, I'm in pain, at least I've got control of it. And at least I'm kind of fighting back. You know what I'm saying? And I think kind of that's how it does it for me. I just feel lethargic. I feel like I have this knot in my stomach that won't go away, and I have a choice and I have a crossroads. And I think I feel when it comes, I get overwhelmed quite easily at the minute when I didn't used to. I feel like what was crazy for me was the internet has a massive effect on me. I feel like it's when I was younger, I said that the whole thing about being in a famous rock star or whatever, like it didn't get to me, but it did. I was lying the whole time. I think like, if 50% of people hate you and 50% of people love you, that's a really hard thing to deal with. And people got really negative towards me, and they never knew me. Things got spread on the internet about me that aren't even true, but just because it's on Twitter or TikTok, it's true, or Instagram, it's true. And I think it's like, I feel like I've kind of come to a point in my life where like I'm trying, I think for the first time, I'm actually starting to not care because it's out of my control. And I think what you can do, like, to relate it to everyday life, it's like people are going to love you in work, people are not going to like you in work, but that is not on you. You can't control that. I feel like the one thing you can control is your own health and your own head and your own thing, and you got to protect that. You got to protect that dearly. And I think that's when people really kind of can feel that from you, that when you're secure in yourself, like, and you know the ant, you can try and like protect your surroundings a little bit, things will affect you less. But it was fucking hard, man. Like, I'm 26 now and 27's around the corner, which is so funny for a fucking musician, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like I've been doing this since I was 17 and really battling since I was 17. Like, me and my best mate, my guitar player, Adam, we have never had it. It's been really fucking hard to kind of get where we are. And we kind of come out of it on the other side, but like, it's always been about mental health. Like, we've always been like fucking dark as fuck, you know what I mean? But like, always about positivity and love and getting through it and finding a community to fight together, instead of being like, I feel completely isolated and have to deal with this on my own, because you don't. There's always help out there. It's always literally just like, if you can just bring yourself to literally type in on a comment section or a thing, I am struggling, I need help. I'm telling you, I have a real big faith in humanity, even though the world's pretty fucked right now. I know that if you write something down, be like, hello, my name is this, I struggle with this, I bet you people respond to you.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you're talking about, and you know, just taking a step back from what you were saying, I think for people who struggle with anxiety and depressions, mornings are brutal.
Yeah.
And sometimes just knowing that mornings are brutal can help sometimes, because it's like you said, you know, this amazing day, the day before, you're looking forward to the next day. And, you know, it's like you just woke up. Nothing's had a chance to happen, but you feel like you just got run over.
100%. You know? It's crazy. I hate it.
It's like everything feels like you're like lead. Everything feels weighted. And I think just knowing that that can happen, but like you said, one, it can go away as time goes on. 100%. Give yourself some time. But the other thing that I think you're talking about that I think is so important is just think to yourself, like, you know, the combination of accepting and giving yourself the space to be patient and let it pass is kind of one thing. But then also thinking about, like, well, is there anything I can do? You know, you're talking about what I think is probably the best thing. I think getting up and getting outside, if possible,
100%.
Is the best thing to do.
It's the best thing. Or even open your window or anything, just like feel sound of the birds, bit of air on your face. Like, it's like just knowing that the pain's there, but it's going to go away eventually. Is a big thing.
Yeah. And I go back to the thing you were saying before about doing something to ground yourself, you know, like try to like breathe a little bit. You know, if you're having trouble getting up, like, can you move anything? Like, can you move your fingers? You know, can you move your toes? Can you
100%?
If you don't feel like getting up, can you get up, sit up a little bit? Like, anything that you can do. I think this goes back to that grounding, like what you were saying was hippie stuff, but I think there's a lot
100% to it. Like, I just wrote a poem. I wrote a poem about it, and it's just like I've got a song coming out about mental health, literally. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna, I think I'm just gonna put it out on SoundCloud, you know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna literally put it out. I'm kind of just gonna, like, I wrote this poem that was like so about this thing, and it was just kind of like, song was called Breakdown, and there's this spoken word section in the middle of it, and it goes like, don't forget to put your feet in the grass, tell your mum that you love her, tell her you cleaned up your act, give money to the homeless man, help him buy a bar, when you're buying your morning coffee, ask him how they are, God save the Sunday morning, but pray for me on the Saturday night, talk polite, don't start fights, don't tell lies, that's for the people with overwhelming short sight, one day we'll meet, man, and I'll say alright, see the world is pretty big, man, but don't feel small in it, sometimes you lose a number, but I swear you're still calling it, I promise you you'll be alright in the end, fuck the depression, it's all in your head, stay with your friends and walk up the hill at 6:15 in the morning, take in the air while everyone else is still snoring, express yourself with your friends, they'll save your life, you know, everything's about connection, you don't have to be alone.
Yeah.
I just wrote that about what we're talking about.
I want to stop here for a moment because Youngblood is actually demonstrating some wonderful coping techniques. I'd love to get an additional perspective with the help of our sponsor, Johnson & Johnson, who connected me with practicing psychiatrist Dr. Abid Nazir. Now, one of the things Youngblood mentions is how he manages his mornings and mental health by running. I was wondering if you could break down what is happening from a medical standpoint and explain why what he is doing is a good technique for combating his low moments.
You know, it's obviously difficult if you're struggling with depression, anxiety symptoms, and I think it, you know, some of the symptoms that we see with depression, you know, is basically helplessness, one of the symptoms, a sense of helplessness, a sense of guilt, excessive guilt can be seen, and another symptom of depression is low interest and, you know, anhedonia, lack of being able to, you know, obtain pleasure from activities that you do. So, yeah, we can look at medical approaches to that. Yeah, there's medications and psychotherapy, but ultimately anything somebody can do directly to combat those symptoms from a behavioral standpoint and even from like a psychological framework standpoint is just added benefit that you're going to see. So, like when Youngblood said that when he wakes up, there's a dread immediately. When he wakes up, that first few minutes, the first emotion he's feeling is that sense of dread and doom. And it's so difficult. It's like one of the terms we like saying is like, your limbs are heavy, your limbs are lead. You know, it's hard to move. You know, Dr. Mike, you mentioned like, hey, check to see if your finger is moving, move your feet. You know, so that's actually combating that heavy limb sensation, the avolition, right? To really get yourself moving. And that's very insightful for somebody like Youngblood to know that, all right, first thing I need to do is like get active, feel different sensations, and get your body, He actually used a very impressive example of going outside and running up a hill and running up aggressively. And that does a few things. Yeah, he feels better after that and it grounds him. But on the same side, you know, activity levels and exercise like that, those are neuroplasticity enhancing activities. There's an endorphin release from excessive, activity. And not only that, it's healthy for you, but from a framework of looking at your physiology, you know, doing something like that is activating your senses, and then it's promoting endorphin release, which is a calming effect. And it's really amplifying the concept of neuroplasticity and making your brain moldable, reconnecting pathways. There's neuroplasticity is it's a buzzword these days. There's a lot of talk of that concept. And, you know, it's basically when you have pruning of your neuronal pathways in your brain, when you're depressed or anxious for so long and you don't utilize some of those neuronal pathways, that they prune, and those pathways, they're like, I like calling them like potholes on a highway that build. And anything that signals release of BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that can repair. That's a signal to your brain to do protein synthesis, build receptor highways, fix those potholes. And there's, you know, chemical ways of doing that through medications, treatments, new treatments like ketamine and things like that. And there's even activities that can enhance that, such as exercise. So, you know, when you're, you know, struggling with clinical depression and you have symptoms like, you know, we wake up and it's hard to move, your limbs feel heavy, it's hard to get any momentum going, being that those are symptoms directly of depression. In your brain, there are multiple neurotransmitters, and there's normally a balance between, it's a homeostasis. There's like a nice, kind of like when you're driving a car, you know, you're not hitting the gas pedal and the brake at the same time. You're keeping it in just the right balance to keep the car going the way you want it to. You can have depression. Well, and this is not the direct cause. We don't know exactly the physiological cause of depression. There's numerous theories. And this is one of the major theories. And this is probably where the field is heading now going forward, is really looking not at serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine. These are neurotransmitters that for the last 30 years, all the medications have been focused on. There's a shift happening to look at glutamate and GABA, which have a direct link into the signaling of building those new pathways. So when we look at GABA, you can take alcohol, opiates, you can, you know, take a benzodiazepine like Xanax or anything that those pump the brakes. And if you keep pumping the brakes, your gas pedal's not working. And when the lever stops getting pushed, so you stop getting GABA activation, you take away the alcohol, you take away the Xanax or whatever the depressant chemical is, then there's like a rebound of your gas pedal. It goes haywire. And then you're feeling anxious and overwhelmed. So in the morning when you wake up from depression, you know, in general, there can be a decreased amount of glutamate release in depression. And that means a decreased pressing of that gas pedal, and the brake can be overactive and pressed. So doing something to kind of like get those levers unstuck is important. So when you make a direct effort to say, all right, I'm going to get my body moving, I'm going to feel the sensations of the wind and the grass, I'm going to get my heart rate up, all of these will start pumping the gas pedal. So your glutamate levels can rise. And glutamate has a direct link then into signaling your brain to become more malleable and plastic and build some of those pathways again. So from the, you're actually doing, medications can do this artificially, right? But when in a natural way, when you do that to augment what other treatment you're doing, you're just getting a synergistic benefit.
Wow, that is so fascinating. One of the things that Youngblood talks about is reaching out to other people. And in a way, that is a very similar concept to exercise, because whether it's medication, exercise, or engaging with people, it is basically having an effect through that same mechanism. Now, could you explain why all these techniques might be going down the same neural pathway?
why are they all connected? I mean, it's so easy to kind of put them in separate buckets, different treatment approaches, right? Like, well, there must be something physiologically happening in my brain and medications address that. Or, you know, I'll do something like transcranial magnetic stimulation, another medical treatment. Then I'll go to my therapist, my counselor, and I'm going to work through my psychological framework. And then there might be this concept, well, okay, so these are two separate things. I'm working on how I think about things. I'm working on the actual medical aspect of what's happening organically in my brain. And then the third kind of component is, well, you know, behavior and lifestyle and activity levels and all of that. And many people might say, well, you know, this might be a life coach or a nutritionist, or this is something completely different. Therapy is something completely different. And medication management and other interventional psychiatric treatment approaches, totally different. But then underlying all of that, there are some similarities in what's happening and what pathways it's affecting. So they're connected. So if you look at something like your lifestyle behavior level, or your behavior, you look at your activity level, what are you doing day to day? Are you getting active? Are you actually making efforts to kind of change how your day is going? That has, there's a momentum behind that, and it causes a sense of gratification after doing those activities. You have a sense of gratification. What do you get? You get dopamine, like, bursts medically. That dopamine is one of those neurotransmitters in your brain that some of those medications work on, because we know that if you have low levels of dopamine, that means you're having a difficult time getting reward, you know, the element of feeling the reward from activities, pleasure, motivation, and drive. These are some of the parts that are regulated by that neurotransmitter. And medications are trying to signal your brain to build more receptors for dopamine. But when you're actually doing the activity and feeling good about it, you're getting a dopamine surge regardless. And when you have a surge of dopamine, in turn, that's still doing the same thing of signaling your receptors. And then you look at the approach of doing psychotherapy and counseling and your framework of how, you know, you see the world and how you perceive yourself and the world around you. So as you're going through those exercises, let's say you're feeling a sense of dread and anxiety, and you're talking to your therapist and you're coming up with a way to psychologically handle that moment, and you're building this kind of like a ability there. It's a skill set you're building, and it's resilience. But when you start implementing some of those changes that you're learning in therapy, you're dampening a lot of the symptoms. So your sense of helplessness is getting less. You're getting in more control. Then at the same time, you're getting like an increase in motivation to continue down that path, because there's like a positive reinforcement. Again, underneath that still lies some of the same pathways, like signaling your brain to build more receptors, increasing dopamine levels. It all relates again back to some of the medical psychiatric interventions that we use.
One of the things that we were talking about, the concept of trying to figure out when is negative mood adaptive. And by adaptive, I guess what we would mean is that it is signaling that there is something wrong in the world that needs to be addressed. Whereas if it's something that's signaling, hey, there's something biological that's happening, the idea of flexibility of what would almost be the equivalent of heart rate variability for emotions seems like a very powerful thing. Like, you want to be able to go to the lowest of lows when you need to, right? Like when you've lost a loved one, or there are really things in your environment that are problematic, and you want to feel the highest of highs when there's like wonderful things happening and everything in between. And you want to be able to be on point. And so I guess the question is, do you have any thoughts on how to understand how people can kind of think in those terms? You know what I mean? Like, because that was one of the things he was talking about, was this idea of like, I want to feel better, but I still want to be me.
Yeah, because you have obviously a range of emotions as a human being that you want to experience. And if you go, I think the key like point of this is to understand when does something, first of all, like the first part of this discussion is, when is it actually, would we consider something even outside the normal boundary and would be considered something you would maybe have a need treatment for, intervention for? When is it pathological in a way, as clinical condition? So first of all, you know, feeling like sadness, feeling euphoria, feeling anger, all normal emotions, right? And Youngblood said, you know, I liked one thing he said. He said, you can't control, you know, what's happening around you. You can control your, you know, your emotions. You try to control your activity, what your behaviors. That is in your power. It's okay to feel a range of emotions. Now, if some, like, for example, you lose a loved one, there's grief and loss. I mean, you're going to feel sadness, and that's okay. When is it becoming something where, all right, maybe this is getting beyond the normal range, is when, you know, if you start turning that sadness about the loss of somebody inwards about yourself, and it starts impacting your drive and your motive, your functioning, you're actually, like, anytime you're feeling a sense of hopelessness, that would be beyond the range. Like that goes beyond. It's okay to feel sadness. It's okay to cry. It's okay to have the emotions. Somebody does something, let's say, in your life that angers you, rightfully so, legitimate reason, feel anger. Do you stay overly angry to the point where you're hurting somebody, hurting yourself, or you're unable to bounce out of that? Days go by, weeks go, year. That's disproportionate, right, to the stressor. So it's all about having the emotions, not letting it affect your functioning, and being able to bounce out of that and, you know, get back into your normal groove of things. If you're to the point where you're not able to kind of get back on track with the way you're going day to day, it's consuming you, the emotion. That's when it's becoming, you know, I would say something where you might benefit from some intervention and treatment. But if you take medications, for example, and like a mood stabilizer, the goal is to cut the high, really high part of that spectrum and cut that off, and cut the very low part of the mood and emotion spectrum off. And that kind of sounds scary to some, especially a musician who's thinking, well, okay, what does that mean? I'm flat? I'm zombie? I mean, I've heard in practice hundreds of times, I don't want to become a zombie. I don't feel like a robot. You know, I want to feel my emotions. Now, if it's a scenario where somebody has something like bipolar disorder and their high highs are not normal highs that we want you to feel, but if it's so high that it's a manic episode and it's going on for days, and you know, everybody around you can tell something's different, your functioning is impaired, all right, you want to cut that high off. Or if you're really depressed and take an antidepressant, you want to get out of that despair, clinical depressive symptomology by taking the antidepressant. If you're feeling flat from the medication, like you're just blunted from it, typically in my view, what that actually means is, like, I validate somebody when they tell me that. That means you might actually be on too much medication, because if you are on the right treatment, you should not feel that you cannot have emotions up and down that normal spectrum. And it sometimes means that you have too much of that medication in your system, and backing it off a little bit sometimes can help, things like that. So you really have to, like, be careful. There are also, it's important to know, there's certain neurotransmitters and certain medications work on that do the complete opposite of blunting you. They're actually meant to motivate you, give you energy, give you focus, get you drive, things that work more on dopamine. And then there's some that actually work more on calming aspects, stop the ruminating thoughts, stop the anxiety, certain SSRIs, for example. And then there's stuff that works on, like, energy, alertness, sense of well-being, things that like norepinephrine focus. So I think it's important to know that not all medications are created the same. The treating clinician should have that as part of their approach to this, and validate somebody telling them that they're feeling too blunted and they're not feeling their emotions. That means that they should look at a new strategic approach with what they're picking, make it more strategic to address what the person's telling you is a problem.
Can we talk about that concept of connection? Because I think that's, you know, that's such the key. Because one of the reasons why I talk to musicians about mental health, one is that the thing we were talking about earlier about being unique as an important thing in terms of dealing with mental health is obviously very important as an artist. Like, you know, coming up with a unique way to talk about themes that even may be common, whether it's love, pain, death, whatever it is what a lot of fans connect with. You know, it's what they, and so artists inherently have been spending all of their time coming up with unique perspectives on these difficult topics. And so they're naturally going to be predisposed to do what we're talking about. But the connection can be a very tough thing. And I want to go back to the thing about hating yourself. When I know for myself, when I am either depressed or hate myself, two things happen. One is I don't want to go in the sun. That's actually how I know Wow. that I'm depressed, is when the sun hurts. Like if I like it's a beautiful day out and I like see it and I'm like, oh God. And that's my first sign. I'm like, okay, something's wrong. And in those moments, I don't want to connect to some degree, because I don't know if it's not just that I don't want people to see what's going on. It's almost like everything gets thrown off, where it's like, I almost don't know how to connect in that moment as I would conventionally if I was in a better place. And so I kind of ask you if any of that makes sense. And if so, if you ever go through stuff like that, how do you talk to yourself to sort of be like, okay, I know that this isn't the time that you want to connect, but that's, you know, that's the time where maybe you need to connect with yourself, connect with others.
100%. I feel like I get so worked up in my head. For me, I just get overwhelming thoughts, anxiety, future tripping, everything like, or just come over me like a wave. It can be anywhere. It's not necessarily a thing. I'm like, oh shit, this is happening. And then someone's talking to me, because as much as I'm a musician, I'm a boss. I run everything. You know what I mean? I run my social media. I run my music. I write my music. I run my merch. I run everything. You know what I'm saying? So like when that shit happens, I have to kind of go like, and again, it's all about grounding myself. I literally will just be like, I need 2 minutes, and I walk out the room. I walk in the toilet. I splash some water on my face. I will, I'll go to a coffee shop. I'll smell some coffee, or like, I don't know. I'm all my life, I've loved smells. I've loved scents. I'm good at that. You know what I mean? So like, I'll have some perfume or lavender or some shit like that.
Lavender.
Do you know what I mean? I'll just go into the toilet and I'll have some like hand sanitizer or lavender or whatever that I'll just smell. And I'll be like, all right, cool, I'm good. And it just kind of brings me back down to earth. I honestly, like, try it. I promise you, if anyone's going through that, it might be colors, it might be something. You'll find something that can just like bring it. Like my mate carries dice in his pocket, because he's really twitchy, so he'll just like have dice in his pocket that'll have like, he'll be able to just do that. If he gets anxious, he gets to roll the dice, you know what I mean, in his pocket, and he just can feel it. And it's, again, it's like a grounding thing that just like brings you being like, yo, I'm real, I'm working all right, there's nothing wrong, it's just my head doing what it does, you know what I'm saying? But like, I can come back to it. And I think it's that kind of thing that helps me a lot, you know?
Yeah, I'm gonna double down on that lavender thing, because I remember the first time I did that, and someone said, hey, what about this? And I just remember being like, I don't know what's going on right now, but I feel so much better than I did 10 seconds ago.
100%.
And one thing we may be talking about is two different kinds of connections. So one that is a grounding connection. So feel the grass, feel like, you know, kind of put your hands, you know, on a table, and just like, again, be connected with yourself in a grounding way. But then there also might be, you know, whether we want to call it a higher power or something bigger out there, is that sometimes it's also about doing that where you're connecting with yourself, but then also just connecting with anything that is outside yourself can also be a powerful
100%.
Thing. And if in that moment, it's not, you don't want to talk to people or whatever, you know, maybe then it's looking at a book, or even like for me, like I the sun will hurt, but I could at least look outside.
Yeah.
And sort of say, I can look at a tree and be like, okay, there's something out there. That's because I think
100%.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think when you realize that everything's so much bigger than yourself, it can kind of be like, oh, like I'm trippy like you, man. I look at a tree and be like, fuck me, that's been like there for 600 years and be there well after I'm gone. And that's kind of just like, and it's just like chilling in the fucking wind. You know what I mean? I'll be like, whoa, that like brings me down. You know what I mean? And I think I'm into all that. I think music, films, books, like even for me, like you got to take some time. I think like at work or everything, just be like, you know what I mean? I think just connect to something. If it's like a piece of a poem that you fucking read every day, or a book that you read, or you just kind of do something that takes you out of your own head and takes you out of your, like, we're so selfish, man. We're all so selfish. And I think kind of like, if you can read things that take you to another place, except from me, 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 24 hours a day, I feel like you kind of start to respect the fucking world a lot more. You start to respect people a lot more, and you'll learn a lot more about yourself, even though it's like you're not thinking about you, like giving your attention and giving your love to something that doesn't involve your life will make your life a lot better, because it kind of gives yourself a break from thinking about you all the time, because we're all fucking selfish. You know what I mean? We are.
Now tell me what you mean by that. We're all selfish. Like, in what way?
I just believe that, like, we live in here. I'm saying you live in there, I live in here. And whether you like it or not, in my head, it's like 80% of the time we do spend, like, even if you look after someone, you spend the time in your own head. And I think it's kind of important to give parts of your imagination and parts of yourself to art, a message, the TV, something that doesn't kind of require having to live in there all the time. And that's what I mean. I think kind of like when you're in your own head, you're thinking about eating, drinking, pissing, shitting, fucking, what am I going to get eat tonight? What's going on at work? What's going on at school? What's going on at thing? What's going on, blah, blah, blah. If you can kind of just be like, I'm going to read something on people who are less fortunate than me, or give something to charity, or go check in if my fucking girlfriend's all right, or my dad's all right, or my blah, blah, blah. It's like, I feel like when I get really anxious, I get really quite selfish in myself, and I shut people off instead of me going like, you know what, Dom, why don't you go and, why don't you call your mum, see how she is? Why don't you call your thing, see how they are? Why don't you read that poem? Why don't you go and go to a food bank today or something like that, and do something that's like other than me wallowing in my own mess? I kind of like actively try and make a choice, and it does lift the anxiety, and it lifts the pain a little bit, because it makes me think about something else. It makes me think about someone else. And that's really cool, I think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about feels like, you know, some people will use the term self-focused attention, which is when you're anxious or depressed, it's like you were saying earlier, like there's just a camera outside your body that's just scanning. It's just scanning every part. And look, if you keep scanning, you're going to find something
100%
that you don't like.
100%.
Anything you could do to just sort of say, like, listen, let's just disrupt that scanning process. You know, and I think what you're talking about, like all the different things, like anything, just start with anything that's outside of it.
100%. I agree. I just see that. It's kind of like, because then I always see it's like there's a fucking Jekyll and Hyde, man. You know what I mean? There's a darkness that's looking at me. And I'm like, oh, what? Wait, you can fucking hold on a second. And the darkness is like, what? I'm like, yeah, you fucking hold on a second. All right, mum, how you doing? Do you need anything? And the fucking darkness is like, oh, I'm fucking trying to get my attention. I'm like, yo, shut up. I'm busy. I approach it like that sometimes. I'm almost like kind of like, yo, you need to chill and you need to like calm down. You'll get your time. It'll probably be tomorrow morning, but not right now. And I kind of play my own anxiety like that. And I think it kind of helps me, you know?
I think that is such, and let me tell you, I like that for so many different reasons. But the main reason that I love that is that I think, getting back to what we were saying before, you know, if you treat your darkness and you treat the parts of you that you don't like something that you just want to have nothing to do with, you want to throw into a basement, you want to lock the door, you want to never talk to, and you hope it goes away, it's just not going to work. You're having a conversation with
the other darkness. Side of your own head.
You know, yeah, I mean? And you're saying, listen, and I think the thing that I loved about what you said is, listen, you'll get your time. Because for, you know, for any of us, if our darkness does not have its time, it will start screaming. Yeah. It will start stomping.
100%.
It'll start breaking shit. But by saying that, but it doesn't have to be now.
And it doesn't have to be all the time.
It doesn't have to be now. Yeah. It doesn't have to be all the time. The way I think about sometimes is like if I'm in a meeting and I think of like anxiety or depression coming in a wave, it's like coming in and like if I'm in a meeting and it busts into the room. And it starts just like screaming. And I'm like, hold on a second. You just busted into my meeting. You have to explain yourself. I don't have to just listen to you just because you busted into my meeting. You have to explain yourself why I'm not going to kick you out right now and talk to you later. So unless it's an emergency, like the building's on fire or there's something horrible happening that I need to attend to right now, you need to
wait.
Turn around.
Yeah.
Go back out and I will talk to you when I'm done.
100%.
And I like what you're saying because it's that combination of two things. You will get your time, but it doesn't have to be now.
100%.
I think that's such a powerful 1-2 combination when it comes to that stuff.
Fully. It's kind of, it's, and it just, it makes you feel a lot more powerful when you can kind of start to get a little bit of a hold on things. You know what I mean? It's just like, not right now. Sorry.
Now, let's use that if it's okay to pivot. Because one of the things that many people do when they want to reach out? Like you were saying, is do something artistic. The first thing that many people do in those moments is they turn to their music, right? And so with that in mind, I'm kind of curious, you know, we started with a song that represents your mental health journey that you wrote, but are there artists, songs, or albums that are out there that when you're in that space and you want to reach out to something outside, those are your go-to, you know, again, artists, songs, albums, whatever it is, your go-to music?
100%. I feel like it's either two ways. I go like dark, like Joy Division, or My Bloody Valentine. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm sorry. I'm laughing because I was literally talking about Joy Division right before.
That's so this. Funny. Yeah, Atmosphere
is my go-to song.
Yeah, no, full
for
on
those moments.
Full on like Transmission and everything like that. It's like okay, and I'll go to like Loveless, My Bloody Valentine. I'll just want to hear the noise and I want to hear the like representation of how my stomach is feeling in music. Or then I'll go like really happy, like The Cure, Friday I'm in Love, or like Blue Monday, Depeche Mode, or like Oasis, Live Forever. You know what I mean? I'll kind of go two ways. I don't know. Like a lot of the time, like more recently, I've been trying to celebrate the light with like, yeah, Oasis, The Verve, Stone Roses, The Beatles, like psychedelic kind of like happy sounding records. Or I'll go like A Forest by The Cure, or Transmission by Joy Division, or like Kid A, Radiohead, like that can verbally kind of like soundtrack how I'm feeling and live there for a sec.
Well, listen, Dom, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been wonderful. I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, dude, I love it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And listen, best of luck.
You too.
Look forward to continuing to follow your career, and hope we get a chance to talk again.
Yeah,
at some point.
Love that, man. Thank you for having me, and anyone out there that's struggling, like I'm with you, and all my love to you.
So there it is, Youngblood and I talking about how he understands and copes with depression and anxiety on his mental health journey. Now, there's so much we can take away from the conversation with Youngblood, but one thing I want to focus on was something that he said towards the end of the discussion. He discussed something that many people are struggling with to find right now, which is a faith in humanity. How can we have a faith in humanity when there are so many horrible things that are occurring in the world? How can we have faith in ourselves as human beings when we feel so horribly as we struggle with our mental health? And how does all of this inform how we understand ourselves in relation to our emotions on our mental health journey? Now, obviously, some of these questions are too big to tackle in this podcast. But one way to start developing faith in ourselves and humanity in general is in how we deal with our own suffering and the suffering of others. When we experience painful and intense emotions, such as depression and anxiety, we need to start by using these experiences as the beginning of a conversation we have with ourselves, not as something to suppress, avoid, or otherwise use as a reason to shame ourselves. We have to find a more kind, dare I say, humane way of relating to ourselves. So if we are feeling anxious, depressed, or angry, we can start by asking ourselves what is wrong that is causing these intense emotions so that we can address the issue. And we can look to both solve the issue we may be facing as well as find a way to soothe our pain in a healthy way. And this gets back to what we were discussing at the outset of the podcast. If we treat ourselves in a kind and humane way, we can better understand which parts of our negative emotions are an important aspect of who we are and what we need in the world. For example, if we are sad because of something that is not working in our life, we can engage in therapy or other forms of problem solving to identify and address that issue. And we can understand the ways we need to soothe our feelings through strategies such as medication or breathing techniques. So Youngblood talked about something that many people who suffer from depression experience, which is really struggling in the morning. Now, many people who struggle in the morning can experience an intense sense of shame in which they judge themselves for not being able to get going or even get up. But Youngblood talked about how he used the mornings as an opportunity to figure out how to soothe himself so that he could get going. Specifically, he talked about how sprinting up a hill in the morning made him feel more connected to himself. It was a small kindness that he could do for himself that seemed to feel good and make mornings easier for him. And he's discussed how, as he's being more humane to himself, he is also trying to do the same with others. He discusses sharing his feelings and encouraging other people to do the same so that we all have an opportunity to connect around our mental health journey. And so these small acts of kindness that we can do for ourselves, understanding our feelings and trying to address them, and helping others do the same, can be the beginning of restoring our faith in humanity. And that ongoing process can help us better understand how our emotions are an important part of who we are on our mental health journey. I want to thank Youngblood for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and med tech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. And I, of course, want to thank the Consequence Podcast Network and Sound Mind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the crossroads.
My number one album, big shocker to me, also Folklore.
Whoa.
Are you ready to dive into all things Taylor Swift?
Good for a Weekend is the ultimate podcast for any Swiftie.
With new episodes dropping bi-monthly, as well as bonus episodes to give you real-time reactions to the latest rumors and news, it's your one-stop shop for all things T-Swift.
We also love connecting with our fellow Weekenders, so be sure to connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and or Discord to share all your Taylor thoughts.
Good for a Weekend is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I know.
Folklore just is that. Like, it's a perfect album.
Or hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.